Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Reckless to Talk, our TTRPG interview show where we sit down with some of our favorite writers, players, GMs, and streamers to get to know a little bit more about what makes them who they are. I am, as always, your host, GM Nathan. I use he, him pronouns. And this week, we got to talk to the amazing game designer and artistic person in general, Vidicha Valetti. He is a game design educator who has been releasing games for several years now as both a prolific indie designer and freelancer for places like Paizo, Possum Creek Games, Evil Hat Production, and tons more. He is also a very fun, funny, and thoughtful former art student whose preferred genre of game appears to be all of them. Our conversation together turned into a really fascinating and inspirational and aspirational chat about learning to fail, knowing who you make games for, the concept of artistic studies in game design, and I think most crucially, the attitude that when you make something, you're always taking a step forward. His latest game, A Land Once Magic, is a world-building deck and conversation piece that is crowdfunding right now. We have links to that crowdfunder and all the other things that Vidicha and I talk about in the show notes. As always, if you enjoy this episode, please go check out some of our other Reckless to Talk interviews and maybe even some of our actual play episodes. With that, thanks for listening. Why, hello.
Hello.
I mean, that's us starting.
Love it.
The podcast has begun. Behold,
oh my God.
Welcome.
Here we are.
But hi. Lovely to see and hear you.
Lovely to see and hear you too.
I'm super excited for this one. Spoiler alert, listeners. We've already been blabbing ahead of hitting record on this.
Can't tell them that.
You know, it's like that fun kind of Easter egg where we've been doing it for 3 years and they're like, holy shit, the illusion is everything is different. Maybe now I have to go back and listen to the old episodes so I can see if I can pick up the through lines of, oh, they have been chatting and yep. They didn't just join the call and start recording immediately. As I was saying before, this has been a really fun one to prepare for, one that I was kind of just like a nice excuse to get to dive into all of your things and all the interviews you've done and all of your games and all that good stuff. So really appreciate you being here and super looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm very much looking forward to chatting. Thank you so much.
Of course. So for the listeners who are not familiar, could you tell the listener a little bit about who you are, your name, your pronouns, where people might know you from, all that good stuff?
Yeah, my name is Vidicha Valetti. I use he, him pronouns. I'm an interactive artist, game designer, and games educator. I publish my own games online at vidicavaletti.itch.io, but then I've also worked all over the industry, the tabletop industry, from like bigger companies. I've worked for Paizo and Evil Hat to like a lot of indie people like Dino Berry Press and World Champ Game Co. I do a lot. I like to make games. I like to talk about games. That's all I am. I'm games all the way down. It's like I think of myself as like a jawbreaker or something like that, where it's like every layer is just more games, actually.
Yes, exactly. Slightly different flavors of games, yeah. But at their core, you no matter how deep you go, the answer is still game.
I'm like a rubber band ball, and every time I put another rubber band, it's another game.
We've been talking for 45 seconds, and I'm already like, well, here's like three questions that I'm already interested in. But I think the first one, and the one that the traditional start for Reckless to Talk, We joke about how we have to, you know, we have to start at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. The origin story of you as creator and nerd. And I am interested in that, but especially, you know, you self-described as an interactive artist. And I maybe have heard that term before, but it's really interesting for any game designer, but I think especially for you and the things that you do. So maybe that's a part of the question. What was the origin of your either tabletop or your nerdy, you know, kind of life, but also as an interactive artist, as someone who designs a lot of different games and a lot of different things for people to indeed interact with?
Yeah, really, when I say like I've been I am games all the way down, like this journey starts way back, actually. I recently moved, and so in moving, I find a lot of things that I've kept from like place to place. And
oh, yeah.
So I've recently kind of gone down this memory lane because I want to start from the top, right?
Like
from
absolutely. We're talking level zero nerd.
Yeah.
Level zero creator. You.
I still have like some, they've got to be like either 60 to 100 cards on like index cards of like a friend and I made back in third grade, maybe, of like our own kind of weird Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon.
I mean,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like that to me is like, I love finding that, and I love rediscovering that because I'm like, oh yeah, like I've been doing this like for as long as I can remember. Like I it's just such a kid thing, right? It's like everyone's like, I'm gonna make my own Pokemon. I'm gonna make my own.
I love that though. Well, but it was a game though, and that is a little different.
A little different.
It's a different type of interacting with a thing that you're enjoying.
Yeah.
Or a specific part of the thing that you are replicating or making your own.
Yeah, like so I made my first card game back in like third grade, I guess I could say. And then I've been making games kind of since, more or less as like a hobby or as an interest all throughout like middle school and high school. Similarly, I like recently found a lot of games that I made, and I have like this notebook that I had throughout high school that was like my games idea notebook, and it's just full of things that I really should steal from myself. Steal is not the right word, right? But I should be like, oh, wait, this is a pretty good
idea. Rediscover, perhaps.
Let's maybe package this and put it online for $5. I mean, like, really, I was an artist growing up is the thing. Like, the thing that I was good at and the thing that I loved was making art. To the point that I was like, I'm bad at school, but I'm good at art. So I went to art school.
Is that just kind of general like creation of physical media, drawing, like what kind of thing were you working
on? Yeah. I guess you could say like at least throughout growing up and in high school and stuff, it was a lot of fine arts. Mm-hmm. I really loved working in dry materials. I'm not much of a painter. I'm also not much of a sculptor. Like I love sculpture a lot, but it's one of those things where I think my brain can't think in 3D.
Yeah. Right.
But I love drawing. I love pastels. I love charcoal. I love Conte. I was like a big figure drawer. I love figure drawing. I loved still lives. So I have like a background in like fine arts, or like a basis in fine arts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to art school. I went to MICA in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I think alongside all of this, I was also like getting really into illustration. I was like, you know, drawing all my anime characters and stuff like that. I was like, I drew a lot of comics growing up. So I also like really thought of myself as like a comics artist. And then I went to MICA. I initially went to MICA as an illustration major, even though I was making a lot of games and I wanted to work in games since like middle school. But I was like, oh, I can't code for shit. So like, I'll be like a games artist. Like I'll be an illustrator for games, a concept artist and all these different things. To me, working in games meant video games, even though I was making a lot of tabletop games for fun. Freshman year, I took a like basically the games 101 class kind of for fun. I was like, I could take like illustration 101, but I'm going to be taking all those classes anyway. I may as well like take this time to try games. I fell in love with it immediately. I was like, wait, fuck, like this is like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And at MICA, like Games 101 is like we start with play and physical games and we don't touch code. And just the fact that I took like a whole class on that and I was like, I'm really good at this. I really love this. I like immediately switched my major and then that's what it was. And so I keep interactive artist as like a thing for me is because that's what my degree says. Like I have a BFA in interactive arts and throughout college, I did learn some video game stuff, but then I mostly explored installation work.
Cool.
I explored a lot of hybrid games. So I was like making a lot of hardware. I was making site-specific games, games that have like alternative controllers, strange ways to interact with a system through like physical means. And then I did board games also. And then my thesis was a role-playing game. My thesis is Space Between Stars, which you can see.
Oh, really?
On my Itch page.
Very cool.
Also coming 2026 through Possible Worlds.
Oh, cool.
And then I moved into post-graduation. I went straight into like, I think I'm going to try freelance in role-playing games and in the games industry. Thus then starts like that whole chapter of my life. So So like, that's where like interactive artists is just like all these different forms of how do we interact with things?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Again, and that's why it really felt like an apt description for you based off of what I know about you, not even, you know, kind of the extra layers to it as well. So yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I love it. I hold on to that specifically because like, even though I'm not doing like exhibit design anymore or alt control design, it feels dear to me, right? Like I'm like, yeah, this is my background and this is who I am and this is what I do.
I think I say this every episode, so everyone who's listened to this will just be rolling their eyes at it, but I'm gonna leave it anyway. Sorry, listeners. I'm scrapping the entirety of the rest of my questions because I'm just gonna be asking questions about the one answer you've given already. There's already a bunch of really kind of interesting things that I feel like say a lot about your perspective and your experience in game design. Mm-hmm. And specifically, something that was really interesting is that you talked about very early in both your life and your air quotes game design interactive arts journey.
Right.
That you were making games. And so it's already kind of interesting that it seems like a very core part of the way that you interacted with games was making them. Is that the case? You know, was it kind of very hand in hand from the beginning? And what about making a game itches your brain specifically?
So like, yeah, the first part of like, it is very hand in hand. Like, and I think that's why I really liked going to college for games. Like, I don't think everybody needs to. Like, I don't think I'm necessarily a better designer because of a degree that I spent money to get. Like, it's none of that, but it is like, I like kind of the nitty gritties and I like having terminology for things.
Yeah.
I say this self, defeatistly. Yeah. Self-defeatistly that I am a pedant when it comes to game design. I love being like, well, you know, like that's more like a meta-contextual mechanic rather than like a direct interactive mechanic, but that's fine. That's okay. You know?
Yeah. It was very fun actually, Liz, in doing the research for this, is hearing you use that sort of terminology. So please pepper it in. If for nothing else, then I personally will be delighted to add it to my personal thesaurus as well. So like, please, this is a safe and encouraging space to get into the pedantry of things you're passionate about.
So I was like, making games and playing games are very hand in hand because it's a lot of like just the intrigue of wanting to know why something is the way it is and like wanting to get my hands in it. There's like a funny thing that happens, and like I've done a few panels at a variety of conventions for like first, like how to make your first game, because I really love helping people make their first games. And an often asked question is like, what starts, like where do you start, like to the panelists, like where do you start, like theme, narrative, or mechanics? And I don't think like one is better than the other, but I always find myself being like one of the only people on the panel that's like, I start with mechanics more often than not. Like rarely do I start with like a narrative idea. And I think that like that's a part of the answer here is like I like how things connect. Like I like why you do things and how things feel. And to kind of go back to my time in college, like when I was making installation games, like I think that's where a lot of that comes from is I wasn't necessarily like, oh, I want to make a game where you're flying a spaceship. Although I would, and I often do really like making games where you're flying a spaceship. But like,
I'm looking at your itch page right now. It's like, oh, that could be, is that a spaceship one? Is that a spaceship one? No, go ahead.
I like sci-fi a lot. It's my go-to. like my friend and I, who I collaborated with a lot, we would just look at the world, like go like, ooh, this is just a really good clicky button. Right. Like that button has such a good click to it. Or like this is like such a cool switch. What you're really looking for with like installation work and alt control is like conductivity. So it's like if two things can link together to complete a circuit, you can turn that into a button. So you just kind of look through the world less like what's the game I can make necessarily, but more like what's the controller I can make? How does like a toilet brush turn into a game tool? And you're like, oh, well, you know, it can be used to press things far in. Like, I made a game in college where we use like PVC pipes and ball pit balls. Mm-hmm. And like, that's how you pressed buttons, was you had to send these balls through the tubes. and like you couldn't reach your hand in there to press whatever button was there, but like the ball pit ball would go through there. And so I think like that's where like that's where my fascination with games, that's why games, I think like it could be other mediums, and I find myself like jumping around. I love making. So I try other things. I like being an artist that's like open to being like, I'll make a sculpture, I'll make a painting, I'll try my hand at a variety of different whatevers. But ultimately it's because I'm just like fascinated in the process of it. And I think games are such just like a process, right? It's a process kind of the entire way through, where like the end goal is also a process, but you're just like the process for the player. So it's like the creation is like the process for me as a designer. And then when I hand it to a person, they are now going through their own process that I've crafted for them, or handed to them, or given them tools to then make their own thing. And I think there's like that wonderful cyclical loop of even a finished game itself is almost like a medium in its own that I love.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I ask any, again, 12 follow-up questions that came up from that one answer, I think I would be doing myself, the audience, and really just maybe the whole world a disservice if I didn't ask for at least one, like the pinnacle example of the wildest installation game that you made in college. like we got some, you know, we got some functional bits of what these games were, but like, can you give the elevator pitch for like one of the ones that you're like, oh, I really cooked with this one.
There's a few, and like, they never got like super wild, but I think the funniest one that we made.
Yep. Wildest means to you.
Like I like the ball pit one. This isn't my actual answer, but I will give the full context to it. Is that the narrative is that you wake up on like an alien spaceship. You've been abducted, and then you've successfully killed the alien that's abducted you. But now you need to fly the spaceship. But it's like alien controls. So it's nothing like that we know, because this alien has a weird alien physiology. So we're like, yeah, an alien, like they pilot their ships by sending balls through tubes. And that was like the idea. It also like didn't work when we played it. And it's just playtesting and needed an iteration. I think maybe my funniest one that I really enjoy is that me and then similarly my friend Jacob and then my friend Yuri, the three of us made a game. It's a farmer's market game.
Okay.
But it's like a farm to market game where we had like three different areas. I think we had grapes and bananas and maybe one more thing. It might have just been grapes and bananas.
Got it.
And the whole thing is like, we made these weird little cardboard versions of like a banana tree and like a box that had a bunch of like vines in it for grapes. And players would run around with like a button that was connected to just like a wall socket. Like it was just like extension cord sockets. Mm-hmm. And then you would just run around, and like I would be with the bananas, Jacob would be with the grapes, and then Yuri would be at the market. And the whole thing is that we would just yell like, grapes for sale, grapes on sale. And then like all the players would run towards the grapes, like click in their button, and then just press the button a bunch of times, because that means you're buying grapes.
Yep. Got it.
And then like you had to go and take it to the market to sell it like a profit, right?
Wild.
And then so it'd be like, oh, market's open, and like Yuri would yell, market's open, and then everyone would run to the market, plug their button in, and just smash the button to sell all their stuff.
Bonkers.
And then I would just yell, ooh, like bananas are on sale. And then and the thing I like about installation games is that there's a lot of physicality, that you can actually keep your code really simple or really rudimentary, because the game kind of doesn't need to run like on its own. There's a lot of elements to it. So we were just kind of manually deciding based on the situation. We're like, well, like it'd be funny if like I yelled like bananas are on sale, and then as soon as one person clicked it once, I go, the sale is over. And then like everybody who didn't get there in time like had to run around. So that was just a fun one. It's something about the interaction of like plugging in a button into a cardboard banana tree and then slamming the button.
That's good. That's just good vibes.
And then just 100%. Yelling around and stuff. So like ideally that would have been like, we could have like filled a room with a variety of different fruit and a few different markets. Like that could have scaled in a fun way, but that's the kind of, that's installation work. That's weird little things.
So something that also kind of occurred to me, where does the juice come for you in terms of Do you enjoy the game design process, like the iteration? You used the very interesting phrase of like, I'm doing it so I understand it. Mm-hmm. That process and getting it all to fit together. And or do you enjoy the ability to then express that to others, you know, kind of express, oh, hey, I have made this thing for you to play with or mm-hmm. to interact with or for you also to understand it in the way that I understand it?
Yeah, I like that question. I think like they're definitely both happening. Like I love both of them. And that's a big reason why I make things, especially interactive things, is because I want people to interact with them. But I do think like it's, now that I'm thinking about it, like I think it's weighted more towards, I really like the exploration. Relatively recently, I think maybe like a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I came to like a conclusion for myself that there are certain games, not all of my games are like this, but I go into designing a game for myself. Bloodbeam Badlands is a good example of this. Bloodbeam Badlands is a game that I write for myself.
Which is a vampire Wild West that doesn't even sort of cover the bits. There's dinosaurs with gun heads. It's a lot in all the best ways.
You're vampire gunslingers in a post-apocalypse where the sun doesn't set and the world is like a weird mutated carnival of strange and
yes, yeah, like just that. For context, so that the people know what kind of games you design for yourself.
I think that's actually very true. And weirdly enough, I'd say A Land Once Magic is a game I kind of make for others. Like I like to play that with other people. I like to see what other people make. I get a lot of enjoyment of like starting that game with people, and then eventually like they are just off to the races, and that's really great. To talk about art school or to contextualize like a fine art side of this into the game design side of this is I think a lot about studies like in art school and in art practice and just creative practices in general. Like you do studies, which is where you look at a already created piece of work and you either recreate it or you try something that they do. You know, it's I'm going to try and paint the Mona Lisa, just to use a big example. And or it's like, I like how Rodin uses clay to prototype and then casts in bronze. So like, I'll do a clay prototype like Rodin does. So that's like a study. You might not be recreating what he does, but you're recreating his process. And I think just that core element of that has informed my game design a lot, where I'll play like a PBTA game, just to like name a system. And this is like, I haven't released a PBTA game myself. I tell myself, I don't think I'll ever make a PBTA game because I don't know if I want to make like that system, but I'll like do studies. Like I have a variety of notes and like documents and all that stuff all over the place that are just like, ooh, let me write a move. Let me write a playbook just for fun, right? Like just to try it out unreleased. And those are like studies because to me, that brings me a lot of joy. Like that makes me a better designer, even though it doesn't see the light of day, even though it doesn't do anything other than just I'm understanding in a deeper level than just play. It's like, I need to give this a shot.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everyone. GM Nathan here, and welcome once more to The Midroll. This is where I remind you to follow us on all the social medias, particularly on Twitter at @reckless_attack, where we are posting a variety of frogs and memes and frog memes and meme frogs. You can find all our socials by visiting our website at recklessattack.com and much more. If you like us, consider supporting us on Patreon. It's one of the best ways to help us grow and improve the show. Early ad-free episodes, level-up talkbacks, and oodles of other stuff await you there at a variety of tiers. Lastly, don't forget to tell a friend if you're enjoying the show, or let us know by leaving a rating or review on your podcatcher of choice. That's all for me. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Something that I always love to hear from, especially for people like you who have just kind of have that attitude of I'm just going to keep doing stuff. at stuff that I'm not good at, and it's not going to be for a game necessarily. Is that an attitude or a practice that you had to instill in yourself at some point, even if it was early on, kind of pre or going into art school? Or is that something that is just kind of natural to you?
It's maybe a bit of both. Like, I know even growing up, I would make little games and I would have my friends play them. And I thought that was a lot of fun. But I also had like a plenty of stuff that I would make just for myself, just to kind of like as an art piece or just as fun expression. But I think like the thing that solidified it was like what going to college does for you is it's like you have the time that all you're doing is making games, mm-hmm. and you have the feedback and like having a timeline and a deadline. And the thing that I really love about it is that I had to just make games for homework. It's like, I have a week to make a game. I have 2 weeks to make a game.
Right.
And then I show it. And then one or two things happens mostly, right? It's like either it does suck. people hated it. And then I get feedback that's like, this is how you could have made it better. And then I go, okay, cool. Next time I do something like this, I know what to do. Or it actually goes really well. And then I learned to like not be so afraid to show bad things because mm-hmm. I'd be surprised. I'll always be a little surprised by like what resonates, what actually worked in again, a very big full circle moment. I teach games at an art school and I tell my students, and I tell like new designers to do this too. It's like, don't look at games as like black and white. I think there's like a different mentality of I didn't like this game versus I didn't like this part of a game. It's like always breaking it down. And that's like also the thing that I just see a lot of people go like, well, you know, this was really bad and I don't want to do this anymore. Or like nothing about this was good. And it's like, no, there's like bad things have good things in it. Good things have bad things in it. And then also like Will Yobst, great game designer, says like, playtest your game scarily early. Which is, I think, very fun and I fully agree with, is just like playtest a game before you even know, like 3 steps before you think you should even hit the table. I'll play a game that's just like an idea and like a note and there's nothing's written down. I just go, hey, can we play something? And then I like write everything I need on like note cards or I tell them to write it and then we roll some dice and I just like tell them the rules when that comes up. And that's just like a good practice to do, even if it's not necessarily how you like to design games. I suggest it because it gets you to like be excited to make and show and try new ideas and weird things rather than sit in your brain and be like, oh, like I want to make this, but like, oh, I got to get this done and I have to get this done before I can show it, or this might suck. So I should like work on it, but so it doesn't suck. And it's like, well, if it sucks, you'll know if you play it.
Do you have an example of like how that process played out for you and kind of materially changed or improved a game or something that you were working on?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Just because like, it's one of those things where like, I feel like intellectually that makes sense, right? Of like just semi divorce your feelings of self-worth and ego from it, show it to a bunch of people who are willing and will give you feedback and all that stuff. And then just incorporate it and make a better game. But the process of actually doing it seems scary, overwhelming. Like, how do I even ask people to be in that? So yeah, just for you, can you give like a concrete example of like, here's what that looks like for me?
Let's do a successful thing maybe first, right? Like a thing that I think works and that I've done.
I love that duality of all things.
I mean, I'll bring up Bloodbeam Badlands again. That's a game that I play tested really early just as like a concept because I'm like, this is cool. Like, I think the concept is cool and I like it and I can run it. Like I said, this is a game I make for myself. So it's like all in my brain and I'm just like, this is what I would want to play. And so I got it on the table very early, very quick and dirty. It was also for a game jam. So I like had like another deadline and it was like, I was already like, oh, I have time to make something for this game jam. It's ending in like a week. So I did write it and then I playtested it really quickly and it worked out very well. Like I was just like, I know the vibes work. Like there's like a confidence in me where I'm like, if I say you're gunslinging vampires and they're like, whoa. And I'm like, and the sun doesn't set and it's post-apocalypse. And you're like, whoa. Right. Like, and here's a T-Rex with a revolver for a head. And people are like, yeah, like I'm here for it. But I'm like, at the table, is it fun? Does it suck to actually play? Like, thematically, sure. Is it cool? But is it snappy? Is it good? And so, like, the initial iteration of Bloodbeam Badlands was just very simple. Like, you're rolling D6, and that's it. And then I was like, cool, the theme works, but the mechanics need to be snappier. The mechanics need to be more interesting. There needs to just be, like, a quickness to it, and a roll should take, like, 2 seconds, and then you're, like, back in the action. And it was a little procedure-y at first, and so, like, I learned that quickly. I tested it, and then I released it. What's on my itch page right now is, like, twice as long as what it was before, but I still put it out there at, like, the shorter, smaller Game Jam version.
Right,
because
yeah.
I thought it was cool. And then just seeing people be excited about it got me excited to keep working on it. And that, like, feedback loop was really nice. And then I'll say on the other side, I have then way less success stories in that regard, but not in, like, a bad way, of, like, there's, like, a game that I like want to get to work. It's like this recurring setting and system that's, like, kind of like a bigger thing. It's like a crunchier, almost like heartbreaker that I really love and want to make. But, like, every time I get it to the, every time I spend, like, a while really reworking it, I play test it, I get it to a table, and it's still just like, well, like, you know, the setting is cool, but, like, I don't know, like, the, like, people are, like, being very nice to me, and I'm just like, no, like, that kind of sucked. Yeah. And then so it just stays there, and I'm like, all right, but I take a step back from it. I work on some other stuff, and then I head back up that trail. You know, I, like, pick up the sword and I go back into it.
I think I know the answer based off of what you just said, but does that energize you when someone says, like, man, this isn't working, or you feel it's not working, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever version of that. Are you someone who's like, okay, well, gauntlet thrown, let's fucking do this. I'm going to sit there and churn away at this project until at least it's something different. Maybe not better, but it's different. Or are you like, well, that fucking sucks. I'm going to step away. I'm going to try to do other stuff. I'm going to wait till I get excited and or an idea or whatever, and hopefully try again.
A little bit of both. I think, like, and again, it's hard work to do this. So I say, like, this isn't necessarily natural, but, like, to be excited about failure is something that I put the work to be excited about it. I mean, there's a part of me I know that is just generally, that was always there. And I think it's, maybe it's attributed a bit to, like, my severe ADHD, where, like, if something doesn't work, I'm like, all right, I guess to the next thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm like, cool. Like, I'm, sure. I'm okay jumping from one thing to another, but it was still, like, a big, like being excited about failure is a hard bit of advice to give someone, but it mm-hmm. is worth getting there, you know, like,
yeah,
it's
true.
And again, it kind of has to go with, like, I tell myself a lot, it's like, you never take a step back. When you make something, you're always taking a step forward. Even though it feels like you lost a bunch of time, like a playtest goes bad, all this work that you put in just didn't work. I always think about it as, like, well, now I know what doesn't work. And yeah. that's still a net positive. I always feel like with advice like this, it's kind of the equivalent of being like, well, you know, it's like, just start a planner. Just keep a planner and it'll work out.
Just have you tried exercise?
Have you tried exercise?
Bullet journals. I mean, it's really, I think it's just you do that and life all falls into place.
I mean,
place.
Have you tried just not being depressed? Have you tried?
I heard have you tried, and just my brain immediately like snapped into some sort of like a fight or flight mode,
yeah,
you know?
I want to run and scream. But it's like, it's cool to be excited about failure. I think there's a funny thing specifically with RPGs where it's like a good chunk of us, and like a good part of design in RPGs is we try to mechanize or make fail forward stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah,
a lot of games do this. It's a big part of PBTA, which I mentioned earlier, but like a lot of games kind of do, like, when you fail, you get XP, or when you fail, something still interesting happens. Like, we're constantly, as indie designers, like, iterating towards a bad roll does not halt progress. A bad roll still does something for you. It's more interesting to overcome a failure than it is to just steamroll through successes. And I think a part of me was just like, well, I should just be doing that also as like a person.
Sure.
Right? Like, what's my XP trigger for when I fail?
all of this kind of brings me to something that I found really, really interesting on your itch page. Mm-hmm. You do have a lot of completed games and your crowdfunding stuff. And again, you've done a lot of design work for other companies and corporations. Mm-hmm. But a lot of your games right now, there's disclaimers.
There's a few, yeah.
There's a few. But I think it's important to like straight up read it. Sure. Because I really liked the way you wrote it. You have versions of this on several of your games, but even on Bloodbeam Badlands, which we've talked about at length, which you are very proud of, but it's early access. You created it years ago, mm-hmm. and it literally reads, Bloodbeam Badlands is entirely playable, and you will have an incredible experience doing so. By buying this game now, you will have in your hands a product that I believe you will thoroughly enjoy. However, not everything I want is in the text. And that is it. That is what you say. Is that like, it's not perfect. I'm still maybe tooling around on it. I remember very specifically, there's a couple where it's like, it's not really laid out or it's not quite done. Yeah. But it is playable and I want people to have it. And you say that very explicitly in some of those sorts of tags. And that feels very different to me from a lot, not all designers, but many designers, certainly for me. I just put out my first game and I was like, I couldn't imagine not being 100% done.
Right.
You know, that is such a almost refreshing, but also horrifying idea to
me. Yeah.
So, but that all plays into the stuff you were talking about. So I was just kind of curious if you could talk a little bit about what has gone into your thought process and your perspective on just putting games out there that you're like, well, I like it. I think you might like it. There you go. Maybe I'll get back to it. Maybe I won't.
It goes back to a lot of stuff that we've already been talking about, but yeah. There's like several reasons why I like doing that. I am comfortable showing something that's not perfect, and I want to be more comfortable doing that, or it's just like a thing that I want to make sure I hold. So there is a minimum point for me. I will also say, you know, it's like when something is posted online, I still have, to me, a threshold that is, all right, I can put this online.
Yes, this is a game. This is a playable thing. It stands alone. It has all the flavor. It has the things you need to play it, even if it's not 100%. It has the 100%.
Things you need, yeah. And yeah, that's like a much less threshold than a lot of people do. But like, I want it out there. Like, I want to be comfortable putting something out there. And so that's like, go back to a lot of the stuff we were talking about, which is just show things earlier than you think you need to. And then secondly, I think it's a bit of the nature of the fact that we release PDFs. Like, these are digital things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to me, to think about this in that same kind of like installation-y, like, what's unique about this? Or what's the thing that we can do with this? If my only option was books, let's even talk like pre-quarantine, pre-pandemic stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which like it is like where I entered into the scene. Space Between Stars was my thesis. I made that as like a quick start. Basically, as like an ash can. I have more content for it, but I laid it out. I did all these things. Like, my to graduate hand in thing was like, this is the minimum that you need to play. This is everything I got. And my goal was, well, I'll crowdfund a bigger version of this, like a complete book.
Yep.
And then shit hit the fan. A lot of stuff happened, right? We as an industry move into like, we kind of have to be okay with just PDFs and digital work. Like, the itch boom happened. We're all posting stuff online. And I think to me, a big part of that was I was like, oh, well, it's not like I need to do a second print run.
Mm-hmm.
I can put something out there and an update is so easy and so simple. It almost feels like it's intuitive to the medium that we've also now created. And then also it goes into the like, things will just sit in my drafts unless I put it out there. So I also will post something because I'm like, if I don't put it out there, I don't think I will ever. It's the deadline thing, right? Like, it's like you need a deadline to do something sometimes, because if you don't, then it'll just never happen. And to me, that's kind of the like, I need to put this on my itch page, because if I don't, I'll just forget that I have it in my drafts and it'll be a done game, just not laid out, or it doesn't have art, or it doesn't, you know, whatever. And then I like feel kind of sad for that game, because I'm like, oh, I actually really like this and I did want to make it. I mean, like, A Land Once Magic and We Who Seek Titans are two world building games that I released at the same time in, and it's insane for me to think about this. It's 2019, 2020. Yeah, it's like 5 years old. These are games that I released initially as just like Google Doc PDFs, and were also in early access. And I was just like, I really like these games. I've play tested them. I just don't have the time to lay them out or the funds to get art, but I think they're good. I want to put them out. I think you should play them. And then slowly over the next 5 years, A Land Once Magic, I would keep playing it, or I used it as practice for layout stuff. And then, so I put out like a laid out version, and then like, et cetera, et cetera. Like just all small little things eventually kind of led to where it is now, as like the small journey. And I think I wouldn't think about it unless it was already out there.
I think maybe the last thing in this kind of field that I want to make sure to ask is, how much time do you carve out of your day to be doing creative work, knowing that this is the thing that you do? And how did you build up the muscle and callus to just keep kind of churning away, keep thinking, know when to step back, know when to buckle down, when to set deadlines? Like, how did you integrate creativity as a part of your life, I guess?
There's like two answers to this. And the first one, the core one, is I think less actionable and more like, I think I'm just kind of a freak. I think I'm just a little bit of a games like sicko. You know,
I think there's a lot of value in knowing what kind of freak you are. Like, the best gift anyone can give themselves is be like, I'm a freak for doing this. And how can I build my life in a way that lets me be this freak all the time?
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I think like a big one right there is just like, I don't think I needed to build like the creativity in my, or like as a habit, because I like making things, or I really do. Like, I like just kind of, I love world building. And so I'm always like kind of world building in my brain, or like, I like to think about game mechanics. I'm always thinking about like, oh, this would be an interesting mechanic or something. So there is just like a passive element of that to just how I live. And again, it goes back to like, as a kid, like I just drew all the time. But like drawing, like fine arts, I also just grew up, I had to say this all the time, where people would be like, wow, you're such a good artist. Like, I wish I could be as good an artist as you.
Yeah. Yep.
And even like growing up as like a middle schooler and a high schooler, I was like, yeah, sure. Like, maybe I got a head start on that. But I would have to tell people, I'm like, well, drawing is a skill.
Yep.
I am the way I am now, not because I'm, you know, genetically better at drawing than you. And I just have this innately in me. It's the fact that I loved doing it, which helps a lot. And that I did it all the time, that I've just built up this skill. And game design is exactly the same thing.
Right. And you talked about making a bunch of moves and whatnot for Powered by the Apocalypse games that you never intend to create.
Yeah.
Just doing that. And that's just the thing you're doing. And that is not, I think, how a lot of people approach doing most things.
Yeah.
In terms of, I want to put a product out there, so I'm just going to focus everything on doing this all the time for this product. And you're like, yeah, man, I just created 12 pages of notes for a thing that I'm never going to do. And I think that's great. Like, that is different. And I think it's worth highlighting for other people to consider.
The other side of the question is like, I do then find myself in weird ruts and I need to like jostle myself out of it. Like, when does it just become like, I'm sketching and I'm doodling into, oh, this should be like a thing that I have to focus and actually hunker down to do. It's still something I struggle with. It's sure. Why now I feel like A Land Once Magic is being published by More Blue Bears, by Elliot Davis. Space Between Stars is being published by Possible Worlds, Tyler Crumrine, and like Bloodbeam Badlands is going to be published by Adam Vass of World Champ Game Co. And like, it's something that I struggle with. So listeners, or you're listening to this and it's like, oh, well, like, I just don't have that like built in, or I'm different, or and like whatever. It's, I think like, you lean on community to fix your weaknesses. It's like, I like to make a bunch of stuff. Sure, I'm always thinking about games. I have a lot of ideas and I put them to work and I like write them down and I test them, but then I have trouble bringing games to completion. Even this like early access stuff, I have a lot of stuff on early access because I want to put it out there. I'm excited to share it. And then like not a ton of my stuff then gets to print, because that's just like a second level of all this stuff that I actually I dislike doing. I hate being a producer. I hate being a project manager, but I'm very lucky and fortunate to have friends that do like doing that.
I wanted to talk just kind of briefly about you working with other people, mm-hmm. whether that is, you know, collaborations with publishers. You have, you know, a lot of people you're working with for your new game, A Land Once Magic, of artists, of publishers, of all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But also you've done a lot of game design for existing games, for companies, for Paizo, for Babes in the Woods, for like Wander Home, for With Elliot, for The Time We Have, mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff. And to me, game design is a very free experience, right? Is that ultimately, you know, you will be playtesting, you will be kind of incorporating feedback of, okay, does this actually work? But it can be a very pure expression of yourself. Whereas, hey, I'd like to hire you to make things for the thing I already made is different. First of all, what's your approach for you personally? Do you need to kind of change your headspace to do things differently when you approach those sorts of opportunities of working on someone else's thing and bringing yourself to it? Or yeah, how do you navigate that if at all?
It is a different brain. I think it's a different skill. Not all good game designers are good freelancers and similarly, like not every good freelancer is a great solo designer. Like, you know, this is a bridgeable skill. Like you can be, but it is definitely a brain switch, and like it can be fun and it can be stressful. And it, mm-hmm. I mean, the main switch for me is it's no longer, it's maybe like two things. So it's when I write for somebody else, it's my job to highlight their game. Like this isn't like an ego thing for me where I'm like, ooh, now it's time for me to like take the spotlight. It's like my section needs to be the greatest thing, you know?
Exactly. Yes. This is about me.
it's instead like, okay, cool. Like I am good at what I do and they want me to bring myself into it. Ideally. Mm-hmm. Right. Good freelance projects are like, we like you. We need you to bring your thing into this. And so like it's difficult because I like to play the thing that I will write for, and I know this isn't true for everybody. Like I've talked to my other freelance like friends who do a lot of freelance work, and they don't always need to do that. I think surprising nobody from our whole conversation is I like to know how something feels before I make it. I wrote for Triangle Agency. I wrote an adventure for Triangle Agency.
Yep.
And one of the first things that Caleb and the team was like, we're going to play it. Like I'm going to run a game, all the different adventure writers into like 2 to 3 groups. And then we just met. Caleb ran us through it. And I was like, great, perfect.
Got it.
I know the vibe. I know how to write this. Other times there's just really good like design guides that is essentially cool. I don't need to play this because you, the designer, are basically talking to me about it. And mm-hmm. I really like it. And then other times I'm just like, I hope this is good. I truly wish I could play this. I really love working for, I like writing for Pathfinder and Starfinder. I've written for Paizo a few times, but I just don't get to play them as much as I want to. So sometimes I'll like write a monster and be like, God, I hope this works. You know, like mm-hmm. I'd love to run a combat for this, but I don't think I have the time to do that. And then I get feedback on it. But like, that's like a whole different brain it's truly like I gotta kill my ego.
Yeah.
And I have to be like, what is this game doing? What excites me that maybe mm-hmm. they're not necessarily focusing on? Like, because they're excited about the whole thing, but I'm like, I want to focus on this one little thing that's really fun, and then I get to extrapolate on that for them. And that's like where my excitement and my personality gets to shine. The other thing is like, there's a lot of freelance work that I did when a lot of like smaller crowdfunding things were happening, and a bunch of my peers and my friends were like, hey, did you just want to like write a stretch goal for me? And like, we were just doing like small little essentially trades. And a lot of those ended up being micro settings or like very tiny bits of work for each other. And that was like another really fun thing about writing for other people was it was like, here's my limitation. We figured out our page count. You have 3,000 words. That's all you get. And like, there's just a real interesting joy to me to be like, I have 500 words to write a setting.
I think that transitions very nicely kind of to world building and A Land Once Magic. Actively crowdfunding right now, if you are listening to this as it comes out, A Land Once Magic. Let's just kind of give, first of all, the big, what's the elevator pitch for this game?
Yeah, A Land with Magic, it's a conversational world-building game where you and whoever you're playing with are going to build a world from the ground up. It's what I'm calling a post-fantasy world-building game where you're going to make essentially a fantasy world. Like, a lot of the questions and a lot of the core elements are going to be fantasy, but you're going to be thinking about them in a deconstructed way. You're going to be bringing ideas and touchstones from non-fantasy things. Mm-hmm. So at the end of it, you'll make a world that you will hopefully be excited to jump into, to play in, to write in, to just enjoy in a fullness that doesn't look like fantasy, doesn't necessarily feel like fantasy, but you're going to be like, that's a really cool fantasy world that we made.
So I think kind of the first best place to jump in for me is just kind of world building as a game topic. Mm-hmm. And I noticed on your itch page that you have a handful of games actually that are some variation of world building. And so it is clearly something that you've returned to a couple times. Is that just a topic that you find inherently interesting, world building, as kind of an academic exercise?
I do. And I've really had to think about this, especially for this campaign, because like, I love world building games a lot. Why do I keep making them? Why do I like playing them? I'm like, well, I don't know. Because I'm just like, I don't know. Why wouldn't I? I love them. They're good. I think it goes into types of stories I like to tell. Like, I love character based stuff. I don't think the games that I'm the best at playing, if that makes sense, are character driven things. Like, I like embodying a character, but what I really like is like, I like the idea of stories. I think about a lot of my favorite, I don't know, just like pieces of media are like worlds that I feel like I can jump into that are also like snippets of something I feel like is expansive outside of it. I'm a big fan of like, here is potentially a huge world, but we're focusing on like a single little thing. And so I like building the big world and then almost imagining the play of the smaller stories. And that's what world building games get to do. Yeah.
Another kind of follow-up question to that is, what for you about world building is interesting to make a game about? You know, because we at Reckless Attack, kind of for our actual play podcast, we played Microscope as kind of the foundation for building our world. And certainly we have long extolled the values of doing so.
Yeah.
Because it was so great. But I also feel like world building, when people think of it, they don't necessarily think of playing a game, especially a group game, to come up with a world that you then play in, right? They're like, oh no, I'm just gonna like go off with my notebooks and sketch maps and lock myself in a room in a Google Doc for a while and just come up with stuff over and over and over until I have a world, and then we play in it. I guess what's interesting for you about having a game and having like mechanics and having it be a group situation that you kind of keep returning to as a topic for your games?
I feel like this kind of goes into, there's a core concept in games that I'm very against, and I have to tell my students about this a lot. This is very prevalent in video games, and it's also very prevalent in, like, I think just novels and writing, and specifically we'll say like fantasy and sci-fi, is like, I am the master of this world. Sure. Like, it's like, to make a good world is to like embody Tolkien and have a Silmarillion, and like, and I like went through this myself where I was like, I have this grand idea and it's all of these cool things. And it's like such an insular, isolating experience, all things considered. It's like,
yep,
I have this idea and I'm going to like write it out and I'm going to make it. And I think people do really good stuff with that. I'm not saying that one thing or another, but like, I do actually think like it just gets better when you allow other people to jump in. Any idea I have will either be challenged to be better or to justify for myself. I'm like, well, why am I doing this when somebody asks me a question? Or will just be like iterated on in a really interesting way that I won't ever see. I mean, it's like, it's why do we play collaborative games when you could just like write a story, right? Well, it's like, because my friends have better ideas than me, or I like the kind of curveball that this thing gives me. And so like, that's, I think, the core of why do I like world building games? Why a game specifically is because I like making worlds. I think about them all the time. I write little world ideas all the time, but then I love exploring them in a collaborative way because I am just so excited for me to toss out an idea. And then somebody goes, yeah, but like, what about that? But better. And, you know, and then I'm like, yeah, that is better. Like, that's so much cooler. Oh, I would never think about that. I just really love that. And I think like Microscope's an incredible game because it, I think, embodies all the stuff that I'm kind of saying. I mean, Ben Robbins, just the incredible world building game designer, true, full inspiration for a lot of what I do. I mean, Microscope, Spawn, I'm sorry to say, Street Magic by Kara Assertion, who, good friend and also huge inspiration, my favorite game. I love that collaborative element. And I love like any, I think like almost any world can be better with like a little less ownership and a little more understanding, like what matters to you. And then that's where all the different kinds of world building games get really exciting. Microscope, what matters is timeline. Microscope, you can make a whole world, but like the difference between the world that you make in Microscope and the world that you make in, we'll just say Street Magic, because they have a lineage with each other, are going to be different because in Microscope, you care about timeline. I mean, because that's what you're making. You want to know what's the time between things, and that makes the interesting world.
Yeah, it's the highlights. It's the cool, here's the big defining moments of history that everything is flavored with.
So it's like when you play a game, utilizing the world that you use in a Microscope, you're going to be referencing events from the past. Yep. But then the Street Magic, essentially like a hack of Microscope, anytime I've played a game with Street Magic, we care a lot about like place, because that's the whole point of it, right? Yep. Is like, I now have a vested interest in the ice cream shop that's a front for an interdimensional mafia because I came up with that. Even though I'm not the GM, it's like in there. And the person that works there, you know.
I'm curious then. So you kind of gave two examples of world building games that have kind of like a specific, we'll say output, right? Where it's like there's a timeline and events with Microscope. With Street Magic, it is a place, a city. There's specific locations and all of the little fun details that go into it. So what is the output for A Land Once Magic? Like what is at the end of it? What's the version of that for your game?
I always feel a little weird because I feel like I'm cheating with it, where A Land Once Magic does a lot. It's like a broader scope thing.
Definitely.
But truly, I mean, the output is you come out with like a very unique magic system, even if it's just like we cast spells.
Sure.
How and why and what is the cost of it and what, like, how is it changed? The whole point of A Land Once Magic, kind of in the title, is that like magic is changing. Like magic was one thing and now it is either lost or on its way out or has changed dramatically. That's like the big output. And then finally, like kind of, I think the second output of A Land Once Magic is a world of multitudes. So it's like it'll plant the seed for a variety of different stories that you could potentially tell. You never stay in one place for too long is the idea. I mean, you build a city and that might be like the most that you spend time in. But like even when you get to making a city, you've built out like the world broadly that you get to choose as a group. Like, where are we going to now zoom in on?
Yeah.
And so that's like the other thing of A Land Once Magic is the output is a lot of seeds of ideas.
Something that is kind of a core part of the pitch is that it is, you know, kind of post fantasy, air quotes, but also that the idea is that it's very much of like trying to deconstruct or evolve what a fantasy world looks like. What does post fantasy mean kind of in the context of this game to you, especially after you've now been working on it for very long?
Yeah. I mean, I think like post fantasy, it started as like a buzzword. I was like, I kind of want like a fun little buzzword. It's post fantasy. It's fantasy esque was also an initial idea. I was like, this is a fantasy esque world builder. Post fantasy is I'm calling like almost an ideological kind of post modernist look at fantasy that's critiquing itself. And I think like mid-2000s or like 2010s to now, novelists and worlds, like as we're seeing more diverse versions of fantasy hit mainstream, as we're seeing like it's not just like the old like European fantasy stuff.
Right.
It's like,
yeah,
we just as a culture have a lot more touchstones of multicultural fantasies and ideas of like all these different things. So it's like, all right, let's like revisit fantasy now, not just like with Forgotten Realms as our core.
All right. we gotta get serious now.
Okay.
The last hour and 30-ish minutes of talking was not serious. That was nice. You know, that was good. That was informative. That was inspiring. But it wasn't serious. It's down to business time. Because unfortunately, as nice of an experience as this has been, it is time for the Reckless to Talk lightning round.
Oh my God.
Correct. Oh, and no. As you may or may not know, and I say this for you and the listener alike, and just, you know, to kind of as part of the fell ritual that we enact as part of the lightning round each time. The lightning round consists of a series of questions. It is the exact same questions in the exact same order that we ask to every single person who has ever been and will ever be on this show. There are no wrong answers other than like a lie, because that's just not fun. They can be a long, thoughtful answer wherein you read several chapters of a favorite book to really illustrate your point. It could be a one-word answer. It could be, you know, I don't know. Regardless of what it is, I will look at you. I will nod sagely. Interesting. Fascinating. And then we'll move on to the next question. And at the end, should you survive, you will get a special prize if you survive.
Okay. All right. So survival is not on the table. This is...
There's a path forward
that
involves survival.
Okay.
And that's legally all I'm allowed to say.
All right. Okay, cool. I forgot to do my stretches this morning, but I think I got to give it a shot.
Right? All right. Pause for stretch edit. Okay, great. We're back.
Are you ready? I'm limber. Yeah, let's go.
So much has changed.
So much has changed. Nathan actually let me go to the gym. We're back. This is 2 hours later.
This was 6 months later. You've just been like getting swole at the gym. I'm very impressed.
Jacked. Yeah. How does my body look?
Really cool, actually. I will talk about that on my other podcast about getting jacked for interviews. But that's not what time it is now. It is time for the lightning round. First question. Is your glass half full or half empty?
I know it's the lightning round. I'm like, oh, I want to talk about it. No, my glasses.
This is your space. You. This is your canvas to paint upon draw upon, use charcoals, game design on, whatever art metaphor you prefer.
My glass is half full. I'm a half full kind of person.
What excites you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
Oof. I get excited when I see something I haven't before, or when my expectations have been like twisted. So I got really excited when I like go to a new place, or I like it's a nice day out and it was cold the other day. Like truly like that enough. Like my expectations have been subverted and I just go like, oh yeah. You know, like, whoa. I want to try that. I want to do that. I want to be out there. That gets me really excited.
What does not excite you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
Ugh. Body pains. Like any kind of desync. This is a very personal, like this is just specifically to me, but whenever like I get a desync from like, I want to do something, but I physically cannot.
Yeah.
Or mentally or like emotionally cannot, but like that fully, I get like real bummed out.
Yep. What is your favorite sound?
All right. I really thought about this. I maybe have a few answers, but I'm going to go with there is a moment in the anime Fire Force when a character uses a thing called the crescent moon, and it's such a great sound. It's like the most bassiest, like boom sound that it makes me so excited every time I hear it and every time I think about it. I think that might be my favorite sound. I could have said something like, "Oh, I love it when my cats meow at me," or when Bubu purrs, but no. Nope.
I am not here to judge. I am here to execute the test.
Gotcha.
And I prevail no judgments upon you. I simply note your answer.
This will be for the audience.
Yes. They can judge you all they want.
Yeah.
What sound do you hate?
I'm very much a, like, my teeth vibrate when, like, metal scrapes. Or something like that, like a knife or a fork on a plate. I have a visceral, like, I really can't. It's like my teeth start vibrating, and I hate it so much.
What is your favorite word?
God, that's so tough. It's actually not tough. I have an answer almost immediately. That's a lie that I just lied to the entire world. I think my favorite word is actually vibrant. I really like that word. I'm a big fan of vibrant.
I dig that.
Yeah.
What is your least favorite word?
Ooh. I will say I actually get like a pretty visceral reaction to just like a dismissive no.
Ooh.
I think actually my least favorite word.
You are not alone having listed that.
I know, yeah. But it's just like kind of like a no. And I'm like, oh, okay, asshole. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. What tabletop role-playing game, D&D, etc., monster or antagonist, have you never faced or run that you would love to?
Oh, I do have an answer to this. And it's a D&D thing. I think I really have always wanted to run and or play against Strahd. Strahd von Zarevich. I actually really like the concepts of Barovia, and I love Strahd as like a concept. I'm a big fan of like he is a monster. I'm not like a he can be turned or he can be seduced kind of person. I want to fuck Strahd. I'm like, I want to find a way to kill that motherfucker. But I think he's so fascinating. I think that was one of the first times that I, as like an RPG person, I was like, a villain can be unkillable until they are not. Like, this is a villain that you feel and you meet and you understand so wholly before the actual confrontation. I think it's so fascinating.
What is your favorite adventure of all time? And now this can be an adventure you've read. It can be one you've written. It can be one you've played. It can be one you've watched or heard on a show. It can be 1999's The Mummy. Whatever the answer is to you.
Ah, oh, damn. Damn, 1999's The Mummy is so fucking good, though. What's my favorite adventure? I'll stick. Oh. I was going to stick to RPGs, but giving it a quick think. All right, I guess I have two answers for this lightning round question. I will go with my favorite adventure is, we're going to say my favorite adventure is maybe not necessarily a start to end adventure, but I really like Into the Cess and Citadel, which is kind of like a setting builder, but in itself is an adventure book because it's got a very specific structure to it. Into the Cess and Citadel by, I forgot the authors. I'm so sorry. Great book. Love it. Big city guy. And then I think like on an outside of RPG front, my favorite adventure probably going to be the Mass Effect trilogy.
I mean,
now that I think about it, that's like the one that's like an adventure that I played through and I got really invested in, and just kind of seeing that all go from that to me is really big.
What is your favorite tabletop role-playing game character of all time? Similarly, it can be one you played with, one you watched play, an NPC that you ran or interacted with or watched or read in a book, whatever, again, it means to you.
I think about this character a lot more than I think anybody else, which is a surprising pull. But I used to do AP streams with a wonderful crew. All Nerds Here was the network. And it's like my good friends, we were an all POC cast and it was lovely. My friend Kevin Wynn, they ran a game of Masks. We did like a 10 episode season of Masks. I really love those characters. I mean, my character I loved a lot, but Kevin had an NPC called Sean. And, you know, Masks were like superhero, teenage superheroes. Sean or Division could multiply himself, or he could divide himself, and he just gets like tiny, tiny bit smaller every time he divides himself. I just loved Sean because Sean was like a stupid delinquent. We like dealt with him in like session one, and then he was just like kind of ended up being a recurring character because I kept wanting my character to interact with Sean. And ended up being a bad influence on me. I love Division. I'm a big fan of him.
Final question. What gives you hope?
A little corny, but my students.
Sure.
I love teaching my students. I think like, I know there's like not a lot of out in the world right now. And this is like a little narrow about like specifically games and creatives and like all these things. But I love teaching these like undergrad kids, like these people who are entering into adulthood who are like, I want to make games. I want to be creative. And just like seeing them work really hard, seeing them have really cool ideas, seeing them get better at what they do. And I know like they are currently dealing with a lot of like, don't have a lot of hope, but I really love all my students and they give me a lot of hope for the world.
And with that, I must extend my congratulations to you.
Oh my God.
Not only have you finished the epic gauntlet of lightning round, but you have finished the Reckless Atalk interview. Thank you so very much for all of the wonderful wisdom. Yay. And insights and just general you-ness that you have shared over the last little bit. As a reward for all of these things, can you please remind everyone who you are, where to find your stuff, how they can support you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, well, I've been Meditia Valetti. I'll hopefully continue to be him.
Fingers crossed.
You can find me online everywhere at Meditia Valetti, my first name and last name. You can find my games at meditiavaletti.itch.io. Alanowan's Magic is currently funding, so you can find that at alomrpg.world. That's alomrpg.world. Go back that if you want to check out the game that I'm working on.
There will be links to all of these things in the show notes. Go check it out right now, listener.
Love the show notes. Shout out to the show notes. and yeah, that's mostly where I am. And that's mostly what I do. Yeah.
Thank you so very much again for being here, for everything.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was an absolute blast. Yeah. What a wonderful time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.